This podcast is brought to you by BetRivers. Download the BetRivers app from the App Store or Google Play Store. Must be 21. Available in Ohio only. Void where prohibited. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Sports gaming is provided in partnership with Dayton Real Estate Ventures, LLC, DBA, Hollywood Gaming at Dayton Raceway.
If you're a tennis fan, you'll love Betting Weekly Game Bet Match on the Bet Rivers Network. Whether you're a bettor or just love tennis, you'll enjoy the in-depth analysis each week of the tennis calendar. Subscribe to Game Bet Match today from your favorite podcast provider. It's the Mike Francesa Podcast on the Bet Rivers Network.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome to the Mike Francesa Podcast. We've been away for a little while. As a matter of fact, since Super Bowl night, I've been away playing golf. So we're back now, and we will begin to head into what will be a very, very busy springtime with the good folks from Bet Rivers. Of course, everything we do is with them. So go to the Bet Rivers app. It's new and improved. They just updated it again. They have a bunch of new things coming. I've talked to their bosses about the whole thing. They have a lot of exciting stuff that's coming down the road. So check it out. Download the Bet Rivers app for all of the goodies and everything you need. It's going to be an interesting spring as we head closer to the baseball season. But first, we got some college basketball and the tournament, which is always a lot of fun to go through. We got all the off-season NFL stuff, which is about to heat up with free agency, and then the draft. You know, the draft's going to be very interesting from this standpoint. And I'm not a draft Nick, okay? So I'm not going to sit here and tell you, here are the best five guys. You have so many lists now of guys and people picking players. I mean, it's ridiculous. So who cares? I mean, you could find somebody who likes and somebody who hates everybody. But here's the thing. It's an odd draft from this standpoint. There's going to be a fascinating run on three positions in this draft. The draft's going to open with a run on quarterbacks. It is then going to go through a run on wide receivers. It is then going to go through a run on offensive tackles. Now, there are going to be good players slip through the cracks, like the tight end of Georgia, who is a very, very talented kid, but probably won't go in the top 10, even though he's a legitimate top 10, if not top 5 talent. But nobody's going to take him that high. Because you're going to get, I think, 4 quarterbacks in the top 12. I wouldn't be surprised if you got 5 in the top 15. You're going to get 4 in the top 12. You're going to get 3 off the board, probably 1, 2, 3 before Harrison goes, who might be the best player in the entire draft. You got some terrific wide receiver talent. You got speedy guys. You got classic guys. You got all kinds of, and then you got a bunch of tackles. Now, I don't care. Certain teams have to draft. You know, they always say, if you draft, you need to screw up. Hey, nonsense. The Jets, if they don't take an offensive tackle in the first round, they should all be run right out of the building. Don't talk to me about anything else. Unless they go through free agency and sweep the board, which they're not going to do. But unless they do that, they have to take a tackle in the first. They have to. The Giants can take another player. They've spent a lot of time and effort and resources on the offensive line. They have some pieces on the other. The Jets, though, with that quarterback, they have to take a tackle. And they have to go out and sign at least 2 veteran offensive linemen. We will get into all that. They're there. They're there for the taking. The Jets have to come out of this with 3 starters out of the first round of the offensive of the draft, and free agency, they have to come out with 3 starters off the offensive line. If they don't, they should be ashamed of themselves. That has to happen. Now, the Giants have gotten into, you know, it's amazing how much things have changed for Dable. It goes from being the toast of the town with the overachieving of year one. The special partnership he had with Wink. Everything that happened in year one. Year two turns into a disaster, from the injuries at quarterback to everything else. And then it's almost like everything that could go wrong has gone wrong, to the point where nobody wants to coach under this guy anymore. You're hearing nightmare stuff about him, and now he's got to look over his shoulder at the rumors about Belichick for a year. Will they take a quarterback? Will they not take a quarterback? I don't see the Giants moving up and taking a quarterback. I don't see them doing that. Am I dead set against them doing that? If they're committed, I'm not. But you know what? I don't see them doing that. Do I see them taking a really talented wide receiver? Yeah, probably. I could see them doing that. Yeah. There's a lot of them out there. There's some really good players there. And Harris is not going to be available for them. He's going off the board four. And I do think he could jump in and break up the three quarterbacks. If you notice, Daniels is moving up and May is slipping a little bit. So I could see Harrison jumping ahead of May. I could see that happening. Probably won't. They'll probably go 1-2-3, because always bet on the quarterback going first. But Harrison is such a polished, such a can't-miss wide receiver. I mean, legitimately, I think anyone you talk to would be shocked if he isn't a Pro Bowl, or isn't an All-Pro player. Forget Pro Bowl, All-Pro player. And he's that good. This is a very good draft, but it is loaded: quarterback, wide receiver, offensive tackle. And those guys are going to go flying off the board. Then you get to edge rushes before you get to the other positions. That's going to be very interesting. Free agent is going to be interesting. If you notice how many running backs, premier running backs, are in free agency. I mean, some of the biggest names in the sport, but it shows you how little value they have when they get 6 or 7 years into the league. They have no value, no matter what they've accomplished. Look who's out there. So who's who? But people want younger backs, and they want to do it by committee, because they can do it on the cheap, and they can do it versatile in terms of versatility. And everyone wants young backs. They don't want guys with tread off the tire. That's just the way it works. But that's going to be a fascinating time. And the tournament is going to be very, very interesting. Now, are a couple of teams absolutely better than everybody else? Yes. Does that mean they win? Of course not. It's a one-and-done crapshoot. The best team doesn't always win. Often the best team doesn't win. That's part of this tournament. It's a big part of this tournament. But you know there's some really strong teams. UConn is the best team in the country. I think the second best team in the country is Tennessee. I've never been in love with the coach in the tournament, but I think the team is absolutely loaded. Loaded. And ready to play big in the NCAA tournament. Purdue deserves to be mentioned. I'm not in love with Arizona. A lot of people are. And then we can go from there. But UConn deserves to be mentioned at the top, and they are really, really good. And the top of the Big East is good, but the fun part at the Garden for the Big East is going to be what happens in the middle of that bracket. Because, let's be honest, UConn's going to the NCAA tournament. Obviously, they're one seed. Marquette's going to the NCAA tournament. They're a two or three seed. Creighton's going to the NCAA tournament. They're probably a four seed. Seton Hall, I think, has earned their way in. Watch the magic number, 20 games. They'll get there. But then you have Providence, St. John's, Nova. Not all going to get in. How many does it take to get in? Everyone's got a hole in their resume. Everyone's got some good things in their resume. Everybody's got a hole in their resume. And they're all going to have opportunities in the Big East tournament. And they're going to have to win games. Those teams, Providence, Nova, St. John's, if they're going to the, and I don't think Xavier Butler's going, okay? So you got DePaul and Georgetown stink. Then you have Butler. They've fallen apart. I don't think Xavier's going. So it's Providence, Nova, Johnny's, and probably, I think Seton Hall's going. That's four. And then one of those other three teams is going. I don't think more than that. So you got three teams for one spot, and it's going to be fascinating to see what happens in the middle of the Big East. And with these last couple of games like Providence and Villanova play tomorrow. Fascinating. Fascinating to watch. And it's going to come right down to those second and third games in the Big East tournament. You want to go? If you're one of those teams I mentioned in the middle on the bubble, you got to win a couple of games in the Big East. You have to. Or you're not going. You're going to have to impress that committee with something good while they're watching that week and getting ready. It's going to be the only way to get in. But it's going to be fascinating to watch. You know, the game has changed so dramatically. And what the NIL has done is it has completely taken away the mid-major now. The mid-major is not going to exist anymore. Why? Because if you have a good player at a mid-major school, he's gone the next year. He's gone. He's going to a big school for money. He's gone. One guy who's in mid-major said to me, you know what? I feel like a minor league manager now. If I develop a player, the big league's going to call and take him. And that's exactly what is happening. So instead of being able to develop those players for 4 years and then in their junior and senior year make big tournament runs, it's going to be the reverse now. If you develop a player and he's good as a freshman or sophomore, he's gone. He's going to be on a big team the next year for big NIL money. And the NCAA keeps losing in the courtroom. And the NCAA's out of business, doesn't even know it yet. Let's be honest. College athletics, as we know it, is about to completely crash. What they leave in its wake is going to be very interesting to see. You know, sometimes sports do some things, and I just say, why would you be so stupid and destructive to your own sport? Like the NBA was with that stupid tournament to start the year, which was one of the worst ideas I've ever, ever seen in all the years I've been in sports. But baseball, after having a real good year last year, the rule changes they made were so positive for their sport. Everybody involved should have taken a big bow. But then they screwed this whole thing up with the uniforms. Why get involved with the uniform? Was there a crying need for the uniforms to be changed? Did you have to make inferior uniforms, farm them out, and come up with inferior uniforms that the players hate, that the fans hate, that everybody hates, that are embarrassing? I mean, what is the point? What was the point of that? Sometimes you sit around just to see, well, let's see how I can screw things up this year. Makes absolutely no sense. None. Now you got everybody going into the season screaming about the uniforms. You know, it's funny. I did a thing recently before I went down to Florida for a while to play golf. I did a walk with Frank the Tank from Boston. You know, he has like a show where you take a walk with him. And he's a big Met fan, so we talked about the Mets. And we were talking about how thin the Mets starting pitching was. And I talked about the thing that scared me so much was the fact that although Singer was impressive, you couldn't count on him because he's brittle. He's just not. He pitched 166 innings last year. He needed extra days off, and he's not a guy that's very durable. And what happens? Now you're going to be waiting around. Who knows to what month till this guy can pitch this year? And now the Mets don't have anybody to hang their hat on. Their starting pitching, when you look at a season, you go in thinking, I got to have seven starters because two of them are going to get hurt. You can pretty much count on that. Or two of them are going to have such rotten years, I got to take them out of the rotation. So I got to have seven guys I can pretty much count on. Two of them are hopefully really good if I'm a contender. Maybe even the third one's pretty good if I'm a contender, and one of them might even be an ace. But you know what? I got to have three or four interchangeable guys that I can use and get innings out of. The Mets don't have any of that. Their pitching, when you look at their starting pitching this year, you're like, what am I missing? Where is this going to come from? And now with Singer on the shelf, what am I doing? You know, we know what guys are still available. They almost have to grab guys now just to have some kind of respectability. I understand, and I don't have a problem. I already said this. I don't have a problem with Stearns taking a year where he says, before I spend all my owner's big money, I want to take, listen, went after a couple of big guys. We didn't get any of them, all right? We played pie in the sky and we didn't get close. Now, I want to take a look at the team I have and make some decisions. I've already told you what I think they should do with Alonso. Give him a really big contract for 4 or 5 years. You can count on those years. He's durable. He hits home runs. He can play in New York. He loves New York. He embraces New York. Do that. Just don't have him around for years 35, 36, 37, 38. Pay him really well. Make him happy, but make it 4 or 5 years and get it done. They need to do that. They really need to do that. And I don't mind that he takes a look and says, I like this guy, I don't like this guy, I want to see here. And we know they have their pitching lab and they want to run a lot of guys through the bullpen and figure, hey, we're going to get a lot of these innings out of the back, so we're not going to overspend for starters that aren't good enough, and we're going to do it, and we're going to steal games with middle relief and obviously with a top-flight closer. It's really hard to do. You go into a season, and you have to fill 162 times 9, not counting extra innings. And you got to do some of that or most of that with some quality if you want to win games. The Mets are going to need their offense and their defense to be way, way above normal and above what you can expect from them to do anything positive because they just don't have any quality starting pitching. With Senga down, they have none. There's nobody there that you would say, oh, I feel good about him. Who? Give me the name. You're going to surprise with a couple guys? Maybe. But you're also going to flunk with three or four guys. And how are you going to replace them? With what? And what good is the bullpen if you're down 5 going into the fourth? It's going to be lean. It's hard to sell. It's really hard to sell this year. You know, usually you try to sell optimism even when it's not there, just to get people through the door in the first 2 months of the season before they get really disenchanted and you start getting a bunch of empty seats and they start doing something else with their dollar and unfortunately, that means running across to see some couple of Yankee games because they want to see quality baseball. For the guy who's up for grabs, and there are people up for grabs who go either way with their entertainment buck. See, I don't think the Yankee pitching is great by any stretch. I am highly optimistic about the lineup. I love that we finally, meaning the Yankees, I don't say we ever, but the bottom line is the Yankees have left-handed power again, something we've been yelling about for years. And having lefties, obviously having a great 1-2 punch, two of the better players, if not two of the, you know, top four or five players in the sport, back-to-back. They don't have a classic leadoff hitter, but they'll get by. I think Verdugo is going to do very well. I think Grisham's going to surprise you, and he's going to play more than you think. And they have balance in the lineup now. Now, figure Rizzo. I'm going to figure Rizzo comes back, and if he doesn't hit 35 homers, he at least hits 25 homers. You look for him and LeMayo to come back with healthier years. There is a lot to like about that lineup. Some interchangeable parts, some depth, some pop. Balance, left-handed power, left-handed pop. But there are guys in that rotation that I wouldn't trust as far as I could throw them. And I think if you're thinking about taking a division now away from the Orioles, who have had two injuries already to key guys in their rotation. And I think right now the Yankees and the Orioles are about dead even for the top. About dead even. Tampa won't go away. Toronto's going to slip. But the Orioles have great young talent, but they have taken a hit. Now, how aggressive they will be now with new ownership remains to be seen. And how the Yankees play this as far as pitching goes is going to be very interesting. I think they still have work to do. And I think they have work to do in the rotation, and I think they have work to do in the pen, especially in the back of the pen. They have live arms. There's no question they have quality arms, and they always come up with quality arms. Give them credit for that. They do that very well. They always uncover a couple of very live arms. But I don't think they have a guy you can hang your hat on at the end of the game where you can say, hey, I'm good. He's going to do the job. Not in a big spot. And that remains a vulnerability. Are they improved? They're improved a lot. They're going to be much more Yankee-like in their explosiveness, in their lefty-righty balance, in the way they can show you some depth and some real top-to-bottom numbers in their lineup, which the last couple of years, the lineup they've put out has been an utter embarrassment. The lineup they put out, especially last year, was an utter embarrassment, both in terms of overall productivity and its lack of quality. Rarely have the Yankees put as many automatic outs out. This year, there are very few automatic outs in the Yankee lineup. And there's a lot of ways they can play it. So they're going to score runs. They're going to hit home runs. I'm not going to worry about, and nor should any Yankee fan worry about whether Soto's here for the long run or not. You're not going to answer that now. Enjoy the ride this year and see what it results with. And just making the playoffs isn't enough. That's not enough. Yes, it gets them back on the wheel, back on, you know, back on the train, but that's not enough. You expect more, you want more, and you want them to go out and get more. You know, I have always, I think, been, for the most part, pro LeBron James. I've seen some of the shortcomings. He's made a couple of bad decisions in his life. We know that. With some things he had to deal with at times, we know that. But you have to marvel at his ability now at this age, as he approaches 40 years of age and 40,000 points, and is averaging 25 points, 7 rebounds, and 7.8 assists. Shooting 52% from the field, shooting 40.8 from three. 3 of his last 4 games here in the dog days, 31-34, 28-30. His ability to still play at a high level at this part of his career is utterly remarkable. Now, they're not a championship team. No one's trying to paint him as a championship team. And I don't know if the rumors about him being traded to the Warriors were true or not. I have no idea. Nor do I really care. The bottom line is, he's not on a championship team. He's not going to be in the finals. But you have to marvel at his ability and the fact that he has the kind of pride and the discipline to keep himself in the kind of shape it takes to play at that level as he approaches 40. 40. Remarkable. To do this for 20 years at this level, you will wait a long time. A long, long time to see someone be able to do anything that even approaches this again. That's how special it is. So we got a lot of stuff coming up. We got, obviously, we are 10 days away from the Big East tournament and all the other conference tournaments. I love the one-and-done tournaments. You know, who's going to win? Fairfield, Quinnipiac, Marist, Iona. I like that league. They've had a lot of fun games in that league this year. The Big East will interest me. Well, we know who the best team is. We know who the best 3 teams are. We know who the best team is. But who's going to get in and who doesn't? Who's going to disappoint in these final days? And it will be disappointment if St. John's doesn't get in. And it will be disappointing if Villanova doesn't get in. And they have a lot of work to do, both of them, to get in. It's there in front of them, but they got a lot of work to do. And then before you know it, get ready for the Stanley Cup Final playoffs, and I look forward to that. I really do. I don't talk about hockey all year, but I love the Stanley Cup playoffs, and it could be very interesting in our town. I'm looking forward to the NBA playoffs. And I'm also looking forward to, obviously, the Triple Crown, which is right around the corner, and I hope that we have more to say about that in the weeks to come. We have a 3-year-old of interest who only raced once as a 2-year-old. He needed to grow up because he's a very, very big horse. He was not ever anything that looked like a sprinter. He needed to grow up. We decided to take a different tack with him and bring him into this year without any races except the one race he ran where really he never even got going in the race, finished like 5th or 6th in a good field of Saratoga, but really sprinting is not his game. He was like a gangly green 2-year-old that hadn't grown up yet at all. He was kind of paddling around out there not knowing what he was supposed to do. just because he's just what he was, hadn't grown into his body yet. That's how big he is. Well, he's grown into it now. So now we try to take a different route, which means, hey, you only get one shot at one of the preps to get enough points to get in. So you're going to take a prep, go after it. I won't say which prep yet for us because we're debating between two, but finish first to second, and then the next start into the Derby. That's a plan we're playing with. We just keep our fingers crossed, like everyone else who has a three-year-old they think can run. In what looks to be a wide-open year. If you're thinking about Kassi, he's coming back for another year. He's actually going to run in Dubai in March. And then he'll be back to do his wondrous things at Saratoga again this year. And so will Hayok. We're getting him ready to have a good run of things in Saratoga again this summer, too. As he still looks for that elusive grade one. He's won a grade two. He's finished third in a grade one. Trying to get him that grade one win. So, horse racing right around the corner. And we always look forward to that, too. And golf and the Masters. Although I tell you this, golf has got to put it back together. The sport is hurting dramatically. It has little appeal without everybody there. It lost Tiger. It lost Phil. They got old and they got hurt. And they haven't replaced those stars. And now you have the stars they have scattered. Now you don't have John Rahm. And you don't have Dustin Johnson. And you don't have Brooks Koepka. And all these rumors about Rory jumping now, after all the things he said for some ungodly amount, like $850 million. How do you turn that down? How would you get on Rory McIlroy if he took $850 million to go play on that tour? If somebody threw that at you, you think you're going to turn it down? How would you ever turn? Like, how is John Rahm supposed to turn down $600 million? How is Rory McIlroy supposed to turn down $800? Now, Tiger turns it down because he can't play all the time anymore. Plus, he's Tiger Woods. He's got more money than anybody. But if you're Rory McIlroy, could you get on him? I know he said things and he was adamant, but if they turn around and offer him $850 million at this stage of his career, how can you possibly turn that down? I mean, who are we to tell him to turn it down? You wouldn't turn it down. I wouldn't turn it down. Nobody in their right mind is going to turn that down. But golf is a mess. I loved golf. I loved the PGA. I love the Masters. It's one of my favorite events of the year. All the events are hurt by what's going on right now. And they have to put the sport back together. Sport has taken a tremendous hit. It has lost so much of its appeal. It's lost so much of its star quality and its pizzazz. Yes, it was going to be hard to come up with another Tiger. And yes, it was going to be hard to come up with someone who brought what Phil brought to the game, whether you liked him or didn't like him. But there are stars, but you need them all together. Not fragmented all over the place. I just hope they can do it. I don't know the answer. I don't know what the magic remedy is to put it all together and make everybody happy, because there's a lot of unhappy people factioned off. But they need to find a way. So we got a lot to do. We'll have a busy March coming around the corner. Baseball. I went up and saw the Mets. Zacharyson up to spring training on last week. We went up and saw the Mets. You know, we still got a couple of weeks left, but it's always good to be thinking about baseball right around the corner and springtime right around the corner and Selection Sunday on St. Patrick's Day. You've almost made it through the long, cold winter, which wasn't as long and cold this year because at least the Super Bowl was late enough on February 11th. And how embarrassing was it for the Chiefs in that player survey to have a team that has won 3 Super Bowls and 2 in a row and have the team at the bottom, except for Andy Reid, who got voted number 1 by the players as the coach they liked the most. He got voted number 1. The Chiefs finished in the bottom in every other category. Training staff, nutrition, food, locker room, everything. How can you treat your players like that when they give you Super Bowl after Super Bowl? I mean, the Chiefs have been mortified by this survey. The league's been embarrassed by it, and they were upset by the survey the last 2 years. And to be fair, it should be mentioned that the teams have finished at the top both years. Well, Miami and Minnesota, the players say they're the best at taking care of the players. But only Andy Reid didn't get a grade in the 30s for Kansas City. Every other grade was at the bottom. And that's with a team that continues to dominate the sport. That's embarrassing. Really embarrassing. We'll see you later.
Thanks for listening to the Mike Francesa podcast on the BetRivers Network.